Welcome to Listening Well. I'm your host, Stephanie, and I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in if you've made it this far. We are now at the fourth perfect virtue, guys. We have made it. I hope that you've enjoyed this series over this month so far. And even if some of the stuff that I've said seems easier said than done, maybe you found a morsel of gold that you can apply to your own life and choose to practice and expand on, or maybe just be curious about. The Buddha believed that peace and harmony are inherently within us. It just takes a little bit of awareness and acknowledgement so that when we're caught out of balance or when we get in our own way, we have the capacity and space to pause and to think about what our next moves are. So the ambition to work on ourselves is not meant to be easy. And this is why the self-development journey is one that is ongoing, always morphing. It's never a finite thing. The ambition to work on ourselves is not meant to be an easy feat. And this is why the self-development journey is always ongoing. We're always molding ourselves, adding and subtracting where it's needed so that we can live a more fruitful and happy life. I mean, we put in so much work and so much emphasis and pressure on ourselves to make it in our careers so that we can live up to what our own definition of success is. But I don't know if we actually put in as much importance onto our inner world achievements. It takes intentionality to overcome the battles and the demons within ourselves so that we can be the best version of ourselves to others. So in this episode, we're on the fourth perfect virtue, equanimity, also known as upekkha in Pali. And I won't lie, I'm kind of happy that this is the last virtue to talk about, because this virtue was the one that I experienced the most aversion towards writing and unpacking. And I do think it's because this is a virtue or state of being that comes most unnaturally to me. It took so much longer to understand the essence of equanimity compared to the other virtues of loving kindness, compassion, and happiness and joy. Equanimity, first and foremost, was a word that I had never heard of before. And when I would see the word equanimity, well, it reminded me of words like equal and equality. Well, now that I've explored and know more about this concept, I guess there are elements of equal and equality in the word, but it goes so much deeper than that. So let's dive into it. I found a definition on equanimity that I feel encompasses it nicely. It goes, "Equanimity is neither a thought nor an emotion. It is rather the steady conscious realization of reality's transience. It is the ground for wisdom and freedom and the protector of compassion and love." While some may think of equanimity as dry neutrality or cool aloofness, mature equanimity produces a radiance and warmth of being. The Buddha described a mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. Yeah, confusing, right? I read this and I feel like I get it, you know, but it did take a 2-year mindfulness course and repeated lectures to really understand the full essence of equanimity. But I really like this definition because I feel like it was very thorough. And so I will use this definition to expand on the concept a little more. So I feel like if you were to really condense the translation of equanimity, in essence, it's about being calm and composed, especially in moments of difficulty. No wonder I find this concept so difficult to understand. So let's move on to the first sentence. Equanimity is neither a thought nor an emotion. It is rather the steady conscious realization of reality's transience. So when we think of any emotion, right, happiness, sadness, worry, fear, euphoria, the, you know, disgust, the main emotions that are there, these can all be really felt, right? They can be felt in our body. There's an energy to every emotion that comes our way. But equanimity is not a thought or an emotion. It's more about creating the space to hold all fleeting emotions, because emotions, they come and go. They transform. They're transient. So unless we're working with chronic illnesses like unaddressed depression or anxiety, like these emotions that are always with us and that need actual help in unraveling or addressing, generally our emotions will come and go and ebb and flow. So this sentence really reminds me of the impermanence of things, because when we cling to the good stuff, we inevitably experience defeat and sadness if we don't recreate that same level of attachment. So, you know, when we cling to, you know, a person or a food, alcohol, an experience, whatever, it narrows our focus, and thus the visual field of experience becomes smaller, if that makes any sense. Like, we become so engrossed with that one thing and with that one thing that provides us pleasure. And so the more we attach, it becomes harder to zoom out and look at life from a wider lens. And this art of approaching life and looking at it from a wider perspective is, in my opinion, the intention for a mindfulness practice. I think I mentioned this analogy in one of my episodes when I talked about the introduction to mindfulness or meditation a couple weeks ago. But it's like if you took two glasses with the same amount of salt water in it, right? Really salty water. And you put one of those glasses into a kitchen sink and then the other into a swimming pool, right? And you taste the water, the same amount of salt is in those two volumes of containers, but obviously the salty taste won't be as prominent in the swimming pool as it is in the kitchen sink. And I like this analogy because that's what mindfulness is all about. It's about creating that swimming pool in our being, right, to increase this window of tolerance within ourselves so that we can hold all 10,000 joys and sorrows. We can hold the messiness that we create in our lives. And instead of having a tantrum and a fit and, you know, being a little child about it, we can tap into our wise mind and respond from a more mature and calm place. Which brings me to the next sentence of this definition. It goes, "It is the ground for wisdom and freedom, and the protector of compassion and love." Oh boy, this speaks to me so much, because even up until now, I realize that when I am in conflict, you know, for example, with, you know, myself or with my partner, sorry, Brad, I know that you're kind of my life's bouncing board and mirror, but when I am in conflict with my partner, compassion and love tend to go right out the window. Like, when I feel threatened, I withdraw and really separate myself from the moment that I'm in. And I know that a lot of these tendencies are my defense mechanisms, because I'm on high alert. I want to protect this inner child that's within me. But it's actually in these very moments that I should and need to practice equanimity. I should be creating more space in these moments so that compassion, love, and thus wisdom and freedom can be felt. And you know, my interpretation of what equanimity is really that space. That space that you create for yourself for then a wise response to be generated. Which reminds me of one of my favorite quotes of all time from Viktor Frankl, a famous quote that he learned in the depths and sorrows of the Nazi concentration camps. He says, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom." That space that he's talking about, that is one that has to be cultivated and it has to be practiced. And yeah, it's just about getting those small wins, guys. Like when you have generated that space and a conflict gets resolved from a very calm place, that is such a win. And really the essence of equanimity is about widening that space so that you can better take a seat in the middle of any disagreeable situation, you can become a true witness to it all. Because let me tell you, withdrawal and avoiding a disagreeable situation, this is not inner peace. I think part of the reason why I struggle with this concept is because I was always living in a way of extremes. Like, I actually thought that my ups and downs and moments of intensity were fun. Like, they kept life exciting, you know? And I do think it's what attracted partners to me until I think they realized that I suck at dealing with conflict and actually had a lot of work to do. But, you know, I did take pride at one point in being all up and down with my emotions. It just felt exciting, right? Like, I don't know. I felt like that was a good trait at one point. But alas, these extremes sort of made things a little turbulent, right? I think of a turbulent wave, that visual. Because when you think of a wave, right, and if this wave ebbs and flows aggressively, when it's flowing in and then receding out, it conjures the dirt from the seafloor and it displaces all kinds of things on the seafloor. The water is murky. You can't really see through water when it's turbulent. But on the other hand, if you think of this still lake, right? You can look into the lake, you can see perfectly your reflection, the images that it reflects, the soft ripples, it's quiet, you can see down to the bottom of the floor. So I'm trying every day to be like still water, to try to ease that turbulent wave that plummages through life's experiences. And I just, you know, I'm trying to watch what comes my way without any attachment. And that's just definitely something I'm working on at the moment. I chuckled when I was thinking about this idea or this concept because I remember I took pride in quoting Marilyn Monroe's famous saying, "If you can't handle me at my worst, you sure as hell don't deserve me at my best." And when I said this to my partner, Brad, he went, "What? Are you freaking kidding me? Yeah. Okay, before we get serious, we should really unpack that just a little." Because, and this was really early on in our relationship, it's been, you know, 7 years now, but looking back at that point, I realized that I wasn't ready to look at my quote-unquote worst sides of me. My ego and pride had blinded me from seeing that I need more peace in my relationships, that I need to take ownership of certain aspects of my life that is disrupting that peace that I think I deserve. But yeah, it's so funny because I really totally took pride and I lived by that quote. And now it kind of makes me cringe because, like I said earlier, I want to be that still water, at ease and at peace. Okay, so let's move on to the next sentence in the definition. It goes, while some may think of equanimity as dry neutrality or cool aloofness, mature equanimity produces a radiance and warmth of being. So it's easy to mistake equanimity for indifference or apathy even. Like, okay, well, if you can't cling to a good feeling or push away a bad feeling, then we just don't care at all, right? But feeling indifferent, or if you feel apathetic to something, you really lack the interest altogether, which isn't equanimity, because equanimity still has that flavor of interest in whatever it is that you're doing. There's still a sense of curiosity in every experience that we endure. You are present with all the emotions and ups and downs that come your way. But, see, a trained mind will respond to the down situations with a sage-like approach. So, again, you know, this is something that I'm really trying to work on because when my fight-flight-freeze mode is activated, woo, mama, there is just no stopping her. Like, I'm learning now to take my trigger moments as a means to practice equanimity, to pause, to create a little space so that I can respond with more compassion. I mean, I just think about how many times in my life that I've responded so quickly without taking that pause in that moment. Like, what will the outcome be? Are you doing this to cause conflict? I just really think about it now, and this is what I'm consciously trying to work on in this moment, because sometimes you won't be successful. You won't win sometimes in those little moments because our programming is so strong. Like, the way that we respond to things is so embedded in us. Since birth, all of our experiences, all of our emotions, our triggers, and traumas, they've been installed into our motherboard. So they are literally hardwired into our programming. So sometimes, like, I feel our wellness journey is about unlearning the ways that we have set in stone. It's to rewire these pathways. And I feel like this unlearning is actually one of the most difficult kinds of work because, like, you don't know how to live any other way. It's like you're blinded to thinking or behaving another way, which is why I'm such an advocate for therapy and inner child healing. It's just so crucial to dissect your motherboard when a twitch is there. It's like you're exploring your mind like a hardware specialist, just rewiring those wires that may have caused some disruption in the system. To zoom out and take a snapshot of your life and ask yourself, what is causing instability in your life? Like, what? Why are the ups and downs so frequent? What is holding you back from attaining peace and ease? So at this point of this episode, I think it's safe to say that equanimity and peace are close synonyms. And I do believe that you can still have passion. You can still have an intensity that keeps your life interesting, but with this underlying tone of peace. I think this is what the radiance and warmth of being that is described in the definition is all about. Like, your fire is still kept aflame, but in an environment that allows this flame to burn brightly and steadily. In a way, it almost makes the passions that happen in your life more exciting because of the very fact that you know and you've installed in your hardware that this moment is fleeting, that this moment can never be recreated, and that this is just a mere thread in a weave of fabric that creates the tapestry of life. You know what I mean? Like if you went viral on a video, for example, and you got a little dose of fame, I'm sure you'll want to recreate that exact feeling again and again. But, oh, the disappointment that comes when you don't live out the thing that you were attached to. So, if we let go of the framework of our past and just look at the beauty of each thing that you do in the moment, right? A moment that you have with someone, every person that you meet, everything that you see, every experience endured, life will truly be full of color and full of mystery with every moment. Which leads me to the final sentence in the definition of equanimity I mentioned earlier. The Buddha described a mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. So this pretty much sums it up, according to Siddhartha Gautama, our Buddha. If you have infused the essence of equanimity into your being and you really live by it, you will feel abundant, which has an expansive quality. I love the word exalted because it means to live at a high or powerful level, which just reminds me that it's all about leveling up in life, which is the whole point, is it not? If you're equanimous, you are immeasurable. Again, another expansive, extensive quality. And you will live without hostility or ill will. So, yeah, if you know yourself or a friend to be a gossiper, you probably, or they probably, aren't practicing this idea of equanimity. Because gossiping is a form of attachment in a way, right? You're attached to the sensations that gossiping gives you, that adrenaline kick that picks you up as you put someone else down. So, you know, it's an attachment and it becomes a habit. And I think that we can all agree that this is not one of the best habits to have. So yes, explore the concept of equanimity if you find that gossiping is giving you more energy than you'd like to admit. Well, that was quite the episode. If you're still scratching your head after what I've just said, or don't really understand what equanimity is all about, it's all good. I don't think you're supposed to get it all in one episode, but if you've gotten a sliver of insight that you can then stack upon what you already know in your path, in your self-development journey, I think that these are important building blocks that can help create the most meaningful life possible. It's that deeper understanding that we will experience all the joys and all the sorrows in our journey. And best of all, none of it ever lasts. So again, I'm always reminding myself of the impermanence of every emotion, sensation, situation that I'm in, so that I can endure the ever-transient nature of life with more equanimity, with more loving kindness, compassion, and happiness. Because it's just this very moment and what you decide to do with it that matters. In fact, I'm writing this excerpt in a rather dull and sullen mood, but just writing it down, just having that sheer reminder that this too shall pass, I immediately feel a little bit better. So let's try our best to not deflect the difficult moments that come our way. Let's not attach ourselves strongly to the things that give us that great dopamine release, and instead try to move through life steady and calm. Easy come, easy go. Thanks for listening well, and I will see you next week.